Zombie takeout shall rise again like a magnificent phoenix. Or some other town in Arizona.
What's up? Welcome to episode 214 of Zombie
Takeout,
the B-Moving Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without further ado, let's get straight to this week's movie. We're changing plans again. In light of the recent unfortunate passing of Robin Williams, we've decided to do one of his films. It is from 2002, Death to Smoochie. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Hand Lotion. You know what to do with it.
And also brought to you by Soy Dogs on Gluten-Free Buns. The things that should not be. All right. We have a kiddie show. His, you know, he's Rainbow Randolph, I believe.
Yes.
He just does the song and dance. The kids love him. He's, you know, he's making a lot of money, as it turns out. And maybe a little too much. Mm. I think it's kind of a play on the movie Quiz Show.
Okay.
where there was like a scandal, you know, that the game shows were rigged or they were taking cuts from other people to be on the show.
Reminded me a bit of UHF as well.
It did. He did. He was kind of dressed as Weird Al from that a little bit, except he had the rainbow jacket.
Yeah.
But he was taking pay from people to get their kids on the TV show. And he got caught into an FBI sting if they would have such a thing for kids TV shows. And we're suddenly taken into this strange underworld of organized crime and kiddie television. That sounds a lot worse than it was, actually, now that I think that. But
there are implications in that statement that are not present in the movie. I'll just say that.
Yes. Right. Or on my hard drive, government. Anyway, we have what they need to do is replace him with someone squeaky clean. They need to find someone who's so pure that would not get caught doing something bad, and that is of course Smoochie.
Or Mopes.
Mopes,
the guy who created Smoochie.
Right. Smoochie is his fuchsia colored rhino, and he is absolutely good in every sense of the word. He you know, doesn't drink or actually, what was it that he was putting in his drink again? I forget now.
Alfalfa essence, I think.
Or alfalfa essence into his juice.
And he was getting a high on it effectively.
Yes, he was. And yes, he's also, I believe, a vegan. I don't know, just vegetarian.
I didn't specify vegan, but he was eating hot dog with spirulina and almond butter on it.
I'm thinking and this was what, 2002? That vegan wasn't even in the mainstream lexicon back then.
No.
I mean, it's been around for a lot longer than that, of course. Don't, before you send your email,
tough
before you hit
call.
Enter on that email of criticism.
Well, obviously it existed.
Right. I've known vegans before.
We went to college in the 90s, so it's hard to say when it went into mainstream because we heard about that stuff a lot earlier.
Right, exactly. But the plot summary.
Yeah.
But I was trying to stop the angry email before they started. I think it was a worthy thing, all right? Anyway, he is pure, but he gets sucked into this underworld of organized crime where they try to, of course, corrupt him too, on one side. And on the other side, of course, he has Randolph, who is after him, for vengeance and to reclaim his time spot that he will never get back, of course, because he has soiled his name. And I guess we could even say hilarity ensues at that point, because that is the plot summary of the movie.
Yeah, he's got the network going after him and various other forces and Randolph, and yeah. It eventually comes to a head, but we'll get to the specifics about that.
Yes. Hilarity and some really tough to see watch scenes.
One particular.
Ensue. Oh, yeah. Holy fuck. Should we just start with that?
Yeah, might as well just get that out of the way.
Holy fuck, that was tough to watch.
Now, after I heard the news last week, I mentioned to Scott on a PM that maybe we should do a Robin Williams movie. And we went back and forth a little bit, suggesting various movies. And I decided on this one because I'd never seen it. You had never seen it. So
I'd never seen it. And
we'd seen the others, you know, Garp and Dead Poets and yada yada.
And those were just too... Those aren't in the wheelhouse of zombie takeout.
Fisher King maybe, but we've seen Fisher King. So...
Yeah.
And I'd read the plot summary on Wikipedia just to make sure he survives the movie and that there's nothing potentially problematic before I agreed to it. And then right in the middle of the movie, there is a scene where his character attempts to immolate himself.
Yeah. It's not played for heaviness, nor is it played for laughs.
No.
It's kind of like a stop in the action where he's just had enough. And, you know, the first thing I did think about after hearing the news was just how many roles he had taken where his character was suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how could you not think of the Fisher King, like the first, and... Well, I mean, not suicidal. The movie What Dreams May Come.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't think I could make it through that now at this point.
Right.
That movie is just fucking... it was hard to make it through the first time I'd seen that because it was just about, you know, the thought about the afterlife and stuff and what happens when someone depressed that you love kills themselves. And there he went and did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, here we are. He's in Times Square throwing the gas on himself.
And at first I thought it was a gag and he was waiting for someone to stop him.
Well, right. They play it like you think he's just fucking joking around and there's going to be, you know, haha, you know, or he set it up where the girl comes and, like, you know, he's trying to do a publicity stunt to get back in the limelight. But then, no, you realize he's really just ready to fucking off himself. Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't succeed because it's in the middle of the movie. A little girl stops him.
Well, yeah, and that's weird too. Like this little girl just comes out and like tells him not to do it. And yeah, how can you not think of things after like a week after this happened?
But just needed to address that scene right off the top, just to let you know it's there.
Yeah. So if you're following along with us kids at home and watching the movies as we're watching them,
well. If that's the case, then you've already seen it before we had a chance to warn you. But
well, yeah, that's true. I doubt
that's the majority. If anybody's watching the movies that we recommend, it's probably after we've talked about them, so they'll know going in.
You know, I'd put this one out there, and there were a couple reasons why I did. One of them, if you watch The Daily Show, and I watch it as often as I can, I don't get to see it every night, but at least one night a week I'll manage to get it in. This is a regular punchline. So much so that I remember the day that they killed Bin Laden. The headline that day was "Death to Douchey."
Oh God!
To which the audience just fucking lost their shit on, and probably more so that we got Bin Laden, but they loved the title, of course. They got a good laugh, and he just kind of looked at the audience, where the fuck were you 10 years ago?
Yeah, this movie didn't do well. It received very mixed reviews from critics, just opposite ends of the spectrum. Roger Ebert wrote in an extremely negative review in the Chicago Sun-Times, giving it 1/2 of a star out of 4, quote, "Only enormously talented people could have made Death to Smoochie. Those with lesser gifts would have lacked the nerve to make a film so bad, so miscalculated, so lacking any connection with any possible audience. To make a film this awful, you have to have enormous ambition and confidence, and dream big dreams."
You know, I love Roger Ebert, but sometimes he really just had his head up his ass,
Yeah, a
didn't
little bit. Other side of the spectrum, Jay Hoberman from The Village Voice said, "Death to Smoochie is often very funny. Even more remarkable is the integrity of DeVito's misanthropic vision." And I think that fits
That
it
is fascinating
perfectly.
of this movie, actually. That is, like, one of the best parts of it. Just his whole...
Misanthropic is the best description I can imagine for this movie.
Definitely.
Hoberman nailed it there.
Well, the other reason why I put this forward, and it was made by a person whose other movie of infamy that we need to get to, and I'm talking about Cabin Boy.
Oh, okay.
I believe it was the writer. Yes, Adam Resnick.
Ah, okay.
He was a writer for Letterman back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, so he wrote this, and he also wrote Cabin Boy, which of course, if you're not familiar, the Chris Elliott vehicle.
Yeah, yeah.
That also
Before Get Along
lives in infamy.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, this is very similar to Cabin Boy in a way, with Ed Norton playing the Chris Elliott role.
Yeah, yeah. And the movie starts off right off the bat with what you think is a bit of a spoiler. Turns out to be a head fake. You see a guy in a rhino costume beaten and shot.
It's a striking visual.
Yeah.
But in fact, that's the first thing you really see in this movie.
Yeah, right off the bat you see that scene.
You just see a very visually impressive movie. Like that, those first opening scenes all together.
And it does have a bit of a Coen feel, I thought.
Very much so, yeah.
Just some of the camera work is very... It has that sort of kitschy Coen feel to it. And it's a little claustrophobic, which their stuff tends to be.
The first thing I had to do was look up Danny DeVito's other movies, because I've never really put him as a visual director, you know?
The only thing I can think that he's done is Renaissance Man.
I don't even know he directed that one.
Oh, okay. No, he did.
But, I mean, he did, like, War of the Roses.
Okay.
Here's the thing. When I looked up his thing about how he directs, because I think we're IMDb lists for the most part tonight. His movies, none of them are like each other. Like, he did this one, War of the Roses, but he also did Hoffa.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then he did some rom-com called Duplex that I vaguely remember. I think.
Don't it remember might... it.
I think it's, oh, what's her name? Kate Hudson. And
very, very vague memory.
And I'm thinking, oh, one of those brothers.
Okay. Wilsons?
The Wilson brothers. Yeah, one of the Wilson brothers. I mean, now he only does like a movie every like 3 or 4 years, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, that's his resume, if you think about it. How weird that is. Yeah,
quite the variety.
Like, the only thing he's missing is a sci-fi or fantasy movie, and then he's done it all.
Don't know that I would see that coming from him.
I don't know either, but who knows?
Now, another thing early on that really sets the tone for this movie, after Rainbow Randolph, William's character, is deposed and, you know, arrested and all of that.
Yeah.
And they hunt down Mopes, Ed Norton's character. They find him playing at the Coney Island Methadone Clinic.
Which apparently is on the boardwalk in Coney Island.
Yeah. And he's in the rhino costume with an acoustic guitar playing for a bunch of, you know, recovering heroin addicts. And playing children's songs, specifically.
Yes.
Which really just jumps you in and gives you an idea of where this movie is going. And I gotta say, this had a montage that I didn't hate.
I'm trying to think of the montage scene. You know, if I didn't notice the montage, it wasn't a bad montage.
Yeah. When he gets the job and then they have the montage of him in basically building the show.
Okay. And you could understand them doing a montage there because it wasn't about him building the show. But you couldn't just say he threw it together.
Right.
You needed to show time passed. Yeah, I agree. This montage is completely forgivable. I wouldn't even know how you would tell the story without it.
Oh, no, you couldn't. You couldn't just hand him the show. It would, you know, have him just do a first episode right off the bat. It would have been too jarring.
Yeah.
And it was very entertaining, particularly because of Norton. He was kind of, his character is very much, I wouldn't quite say an Opie Griffin, Ron Howard kind of character, but he's not far from that.
Oh, like I said, he's cabin boy.
Yeah. So it gave him a chance to really kind of chew some scenery in short doses, which was nice.
Yeah.
Speaking of chewing scenery, we have, the late great king of scenery chewing here.
Robin Williams?
And very much a departure for him.
Yeah.
He was playing an asshole, which he never did. At least not anything that I saw.
I thought when you mentioned the king of chewing scenery, I thought you were going to Vincent
Schiavelli. Oh, yeah, he shows up later. He went back and forth. He didn't really chew scenery
who
in everything.
Who was also late,
Yeah.
No longer with us.
Mm-hmm. No, but Williams, it was quite a departure for him. He plays effectively a villain for most of the movie.
He has done the asshole in the past, like the movie Cadillac Man.
Okay, I haven't seen that one.
That's, like, I'm going way back, of course. Mm-hmm. I guess for the record, the whole thing really was a punch to the gut to me personally, the losing him,
Oh, of course, same here.
Like, I don't think I would have gone into radio. I don't think I would have ever attempted teaching. I mean, this is a dude that really, like, altered the path of my life, So, yeah. That's why I've seen Cadillac, man.
Yeah. I thought I was a big fan, but clearly. Also a big departure for Harvey Fierstein. Because he plays a heavy in this.
Who casts Harvey Fierstein as the godfather?
He plays a mob boss, effectively. I mean, it's a mob that's running a charity, but still.
Right, but Harvey Fierstein is the godfather. If that doesn't make you want to see this movie, I really can't help you.
Yeah. And there's one scene where they reference the Scarface, first you get the money, then you get the power speech.
Yes.
But they twist it to be about a kid's show.
Right. And they are absolutely right. There are some charities that are just completely like, what the fuck? Where the money is just not really going to the cause, it's going to the people running the charity.
Of course, they have to, bump that up a bit, and, they're effectively a mob as charity and just as violent.
Right. You know what? I was trying to remember the name of the... I should have had that as the sponsor, the parade?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The one that Fierstein's character runs,
yes.
Yeah. And another sign that this movie doesn't pull any punches. There's another scene where William's character, Randolph Setz, mopes up with this fake gig. Don't know how much we should reveal about it.
Well, you first think he's going to kill him because he takes him to one of those depots or whatever. You see on the side of the turnpike in the parkway in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like these, conic shaped buildings where they just dump the salt in and they take it out to put on the road. So you think he's just going to, like, bury him or something because, you're kind of like, why is he there? And then they reveal the audience.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it specifically, but quite the curveball.
Yeah. And they play with this theme later on in the movie on ice.
Let's just say it reminded me of a certain Mel Brooks movie.
Oh, definitely. Yes. The scene at the end with the ice, the climax, I guess you will, of the film, it was a reenactment of the film on ice.
Yeah, it was. And Vincent Schiavelli was a nice surprise.
Of course. He always
is. It's always great to see him in anything. But yeah, the ice scene was interesting because it was an opera that basically told the story of the movie on ice.
Well, right. The fact that he, he has to do a kid a show on ice and stuff, and then he turns it into an opera.
And I don't mean any kind of contemporary operetta, like a literal opera.
Oh, yeah. Girl with, Viking helmet with,
except it's
rhino
a rhino horn. One horn, yeah. Now, I wasn't quite sure about the turn that Randolph takes in the movie. It seemed a bit sudden.
Oh, yeah. Completely shoehorned in.
Yeah.
So much so that when one of the Reinettes is calling Mopes to warn him about Schiavelli, Randolph answers the phone at his place.
Yeah.
And the Reinette doesn't even question
right
why Randolph is there. This just happened his turn.
Last time those two characters had talked, Randolph was trying to kill Mopes.
Right, he was plotting to kill him.
Yeah. And now suddenly he's at his apartment.
He's at his apartment, and the Reinette is warning Randolph that Schiavelli is on his way to kill Mopes.
The last act was a bit sudden.
Yes.
They spent all this time trying to build this great narrative, and then they just decide, okay, we need to end it now. And just get out as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Which really is my only criticism, is that last act.
Like, they really weren't sure how they wanted to end this movie entirely.
I get that impression. Or maybe with studio pressure to kind of give it a happy ending.
Or they knew how they wanted to end it, but they weren't sure how to get there.
Yeah.
How to get from point A to point C. So they kind of invented a point B somewhere.
Right. Yeah. And took a lot for assumed.
Yeah.
Although I did like that Mopes almost killed Burke at the end. He gets particularly violent there, but even after his the issue with that one gig that we were alluding to before, it almost kills his career. And he gets very angry after that. Even when he's doing the show, he's kind of angry. And that just kind of comes to a head when he almost kills Burke, Danny DeVito's character.
Some of the scenes that Norton does in this are just fucking insane or mesmerizing, either one. I don't know which way you want to go with it.
Yeah.
But the scene where he's performing as Smoochie, some of those things are just wow. Like the howling scene.
Yeah, oh, I love that. That's the scene that made me realize he was getting a little angry.
Yeah, so they're kind of like, holy fuck, kind of like. The other scene, the scene about the stepdad.
Yeah.
Which wasn't even about him being angry, but it was just like, what?
But his whole delivery and his mannerisms get very manic and.
Yeah.
Intense.
They fucked with his friends, is what it came down to in the end.
Yeah, yeah, basically. Speaking of intense, singer Henry Rollins auditioned for the part of Spinner. Rollins details the first audition with Danny DeVito on his spoken word performance DVD, Henry Rollins, Up For It, part of which consists of throwing a chair at DeVito.
I think, I'm trying to think, I don't know, I can't know if I see Rollins as Spinner.
No,
Spinner needed to be a gentle giant.
Yeah, yeah, Spinner is an ex-boxer who took a few too many shots to the head, basically. And he's kind of special. And I can't see Rollins playing that role.
No, I can't either.
Also, in the scene where Spinner gets dropped in the middle of the street, there's a puddle beside him with the Chinese character for death reflected in it.
Oh, yeah.
Which had to be completely deliberate and planned. I loved that.
It was this weird film noir thing going on with him getting killed and stuff.
Again, that's another, I don't know if it was an influence or kind of, just the same ideas, but it felt very Coen's.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Also, Robin Williams received a Razzie nomination for Worst Supporting Actor for this movie, but he lost it to Hayden Christensen for Attack of the Clones.
I was going to say, the Razzies can really go fuck themselves.
I think a lot of times I get it right. That particular nomination, I don't agree with, but...
Nah. Although, his performance was not his best performance.
Well, not his best performance, certainly, but I thought it was interesting more so than good.
I mean, his Scottish accent ventures into Australian territory, shall we say?
I think the nomination was more reflective of the general opinion of the movie, which isn't very good.
Yeah, that's the problem with the Razzies. They really just want to pile on, know?
Yeah. And finally, the ending of the movie, the actual last scene, felt a little too sudden and too happy.
Of course.
Which I know was intentional. I just didn't quite get the joke, I don't think.
I couldn't believe they were actually using that your love is bringing me higher. I mean, it was cliche then.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I mean, they were definitely doing it in an ironic
way.
Oh,
yeah, I know there was a joke there, I just don't quite know what it was.
Yeah, I just, it really, yeah, it wasn't a great joke. I mean, were they doing it, like, literally, because they were flying around? I mean...
Well, I think the song was just chosen because it's a very happy, upbeat, and cliche for that reason.
It's a cliche song to end a film on.
Yeah, yeah.
There are many songs, you know, many movies that have ended with that song
right.
throughout the 80s and 90s.
So that's why it was chosen, more so than I think the lyrical content and the wire work.
Like, I would say it even beats out Pete Townsend's Let My Love yeah. Open the Door.
Yeah.
Which is like, for some reason, Hollywood just decides, yeah, we'll end it with that one.
I loved that song until about 50 movies killed it for me.
Well, right. Like, how many... I think we need to look up IMDb if they had listed by how many movies you end with the song.
Yeah. Right, I'm done with my notes.
You know, I haven't even been using mine. I'm actually just doing this off of memory. Oh, I think I hit it all.
Right.
Oh, wait a minute. Back to Jon Stewart.
Okay.
And it was after I made the comment about it being visual mm-hmm. and visually stunning, then Jon Stewart's character came on. The hair.
Yeah, he's got kind of a Caesar thing going on. It doesn't work for him.
It's hilarious. I don't know if that was supposed to just be funny mm-hmm. or if that was like a thing he was trying. It was pretty damn close to a Clooney.
Yeah, basically. It was a Caesar cut.
Yeah.
And this is another point where I wish we had IMDb, because I can't think of any other acting gigs he's had.
He did an Adam Sandler movie.
Okay.
I remember him in one of those.
Well, I don't know if that really counts as acting, though.
No, it doesn't. Let's see if IMDb is back up. I can't really remember him doing anything else, though.
Interesting you mentioned Sandler, because I was thinking about it earlier tonight, you know, other things I've seen him in. And I realized I first saw him and Sandler in the same thing.
What's that?
Remember Remote Control?
I never saw that one.
It was a quote-unquote game show.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, no.
TV in
okay.
the 80s.
Hold on. I thought you were talking about the movie that Adam Sandler did
thing.
Where he controlled
no,
things with
no,
the remote
click,
control.
No,
I don't even know if that was... Oh, is that what that was called?
Yeah, skip that one.
Yeah, I never saw that. But the game show Remote Control...
Yes.
Fuck, yes, I saw that. Was Jon Stewart in that too?
He was one of those regular, you know, players that they brought in, like Sandler.
And if you told me that Colin Quinn would be like one of the funniest guys in the country, mm-hmm. like 20 years later
yeah,
after
yeah.
that, I would have thought you were crazy.
That was the first time I ever saw, obviously, Sandler. That's well known that that's where Sandler got his start. And Jon
yes.
Stewart.
Yeah, I remembered Adam Sandler, but I did not remember Jon
Stewart. He wasn't brought in as often as Sandler was. I think they kind of knew that Sandler was going to be big, so they used him a lot. All right, so on to sequels and remakes. No sequels or remakes yet.
I don't know.
Too soon for a remake. Obviously, there's no room for a sequel.
I don't think you could ever see this being, you know, if someone's going to, you know, really go for
no
the,
one's ever gonna touch this movie because
the dive bomb.
But yeah,
like, would you see a remake of Cabin Boy first? Maybe
yeah,
I don't know.
And I don't think you need to. I mean, ending aside, I think it hits the mark pretty well.
Yeah, it does.
Speaking of which, on to Brains.
On to Brains.
The ending was a bit too sudden and too rushed. I wasn't crazy about the romantic subplot, although I did like the chemistry between Norton and Catherine Keener.
It was believable, but it was kind of also shoehorned.
Yeah, that's another thing I think the network wanted, or the studio wanted, you know, just to check the box. But overall, I really like the movie I'm going for.
I'm right with you. It was shoehorned in the romantic subplot, but it also needed to be a catalyst to really piss off Mopes, too, in the end, to drive him to... get ready to start, you know, busting caps. I wasn't that big of a fan of the Irish mob, but
well, yeah, they served their purpose.
I think I like how it turned out. Like it, the turn was that they wound up working for him instead of bullying him in the end. Mm-hmm. And but really, anyway, Schiavelli alone gets like a brain back to this. So I'm going four as well.
All right, and what have we learned?
Oh man. Gonna miss the hell out of him.
Oh yeah.
And I also learned that I'm actually capable of liking a montage. All right, so until next week, and we'll be reviewing God Bless America again.
Yes.
Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far and every movie we're going to review, up through, again, I keep saying, to, I think it is 218 now because we plugged this in. It was 217 before.
The Big Bus.
Actually, what is our place? Oh, Cannibal Woman in the Avocado Jungle of Death. It's our placeholder now.
Why are we using that as a placeholder?
Because that's what was next one after we filled everything in that we wanted to do. And I don't think we're going to be able to find it. So it will serve for a placeholder for a while.
Should we use Gay Niggers from Space? So it's just we can keep saying that name.
You can keep saying that.
It's the name of the movie. I didn't make it.
From Outer Space is the full title. And I would like to actually
review Outer Space. Sorry.
Actually, would like to review that. It's worth a look. back to the outro.
Back to the outro.
You'll also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. We'll get to it eventually. And the recommendations list. I am so glad we agreed on this one. I was ready for another postal. Just because of how polarizing the movie is.
But, you know, there's one thing we didn't really express about the entire... I mean, visually, this movie is fucking wonderful, actually. Yeah. It's wonderful to look at. Mm-hmm. The cast is damn flawless.
Yeah, Ebert said it best. You need the talent to do this. Whatever you think of it.
And the premise has never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
And not far off the mark.
And I think that's what Ebert and a lot of people were missing when they panned the movie, is it's supposed to be dark and angry and misanthropic.
Right. And, I mean, it's also a statement about the commercialization of our kids.
Yeah, well, yeah.
There was just a Nathan For You on last night about how easy it is to market to kids. Mm-hmm. And how he does this whole ad campaign for this guy's toy about, you know, if you don't have this toy, you're a baby. And it's this whole, like he makes this box of kids with the toys pointing and laughing at a kid in a diaper without the toy. Right. And just them convincing kids to buy this toy just for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy.
And it's not just kids. I mean, why do you think all pop music is targeted towards 14-year-olds?
Well, true, but this movie is really about the damage that advertising to kids.
Yeah. But yeah, and it also goes older, is my point. But yeah.
Yeah. It's like that movie that you didn't get to see. It's about growing good consumers.
Yeah, yeah. You can also email us zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1 or for the alphanumerically challenged 414-368-9861. Always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
Nano, nano, motherfuckers.
Rest in peace, Mr. Williams.
Yes.
You know, I'm happy to do this, but we do have trained counselors inside who can help you.
That caught me off guard.
I almost would not want to even reveal that to someone who hasn't seen the movie. Because, you know what? I thought they were going to attempt to kill him in that
Did
scene.
Did I retake that part then?
I think...
Cut that out?
Maybe.
Okay. I'll just cut the whole thing.